Robert Bob McCarthy, acting mayor of City of Salem, is joining us here on MSONewsSports.com. And as part of our series of interviews with the candidates that will be appearing on the March 28th primary ballot in the City of Salem, Acting Mayor McCarthy, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, these are informational interviews, and as I've been pointing out with these, that I have three questions, or our website basically has three questions, or three topic areas, general topic areas, and then we can digress at the end of the interview and talk about a few other things as important issues that candidates feel want to be addressed or should be addressed. So we'll get to those. So first up, we'll have Salem Public Schools, and we have a question on development and affordability in the City of Salem. And then the big one here, what does it mean, or how does it help or hurt Salem having the former mayor, now the lieutenant governor? So those are just a quick overview of some broad topics, and our candidates can take these wherever they want. So, Bob, let me begin with you and the Salem Public Schools. So, you know, you as a ward counselor, you're very much in tune with Salem Public Schools over the last decade plus, and I'm sure beyond that, because I know your kids a while ago were in the Salem Public Schools. So I guess give us your thoughts on the Salem schools, where they're at now, and how you see it as something that involves the mayor.
Sure. I mean, as the proud parent of two Salem High School graduates, both my boys grew up in the school system. My wife was a paraprofessional. She worked for the school system for a while. I know the value of Salem school system's education as a parent. I mean, both my boys benefit from it. They both went on to both go graduate from UMass Amherst. Salem High School, you know, when I look at Salem High School in those years, those are formative years for anybody, but back in the day, I always said, and still say to this day, high school education is to set you up for life, whatever you choose to do. And when I look at the high school now, we're really putting an emphasis on the CTE program at the high school. It is, if anyone hasn't seen it, it's fabulous. As a tradesman myself, as a carpenter, to be able to go out and learn skill, to develop a skill set where you can get a certificate in a wide variety of different areas now. We're talking culinary, we're talking med tech, we're talking small engine repair. Crowley, who's investing in the wind marshaling yard, is set aside funds for small engine repairs for the marine industry. These are all exciting topics and exciting courses that our students can take part of while still getting a traditional education. But it provides an opportunity if someone is, isn't quite sure if they want to go to college, or maybe they're not quite sure if they can fully pay for that full boat of going to college, that if you have a certificate in one of these areas, you can go out and, get a decent paying job right out of high school, and then maybe set aside some money or go to a community college to kind of figure out what you're doing. So I think, the opportunities at the high school level are great. I mean, in a post-COVID era that we're in now, I mean, we saw everyone have to pivot towards, learning online, which, I mean, back in the day, if someone told me that someone was going to be able to take classes via Zoom, I wouldn't even have told you what that was. But it also taught us what the gap is with regards to technology and equity for all our students across the district. So, we really need to focus on that as well. And, the last part of what's been going on at the school system, which has been a great asset and something we need to expand on, is the Cartwheel program, which is providing mental health services for our kids that, were sometimes in the queue for those kind of services that weren't able to get them. And we just partnered this year with Cartwheel. I think it's been on the news. I know our superintendent's been on there talking about it. It's a great program, but we're going to, we were slotted for, 100 slots. And I think we've already filled that. So there is obviously a big need for those types of services. So in the future, we're going to look to expand that because, in a post-COVID world, it's kind of difficult. And I think it's been really difficult for our young students, so we want to make sure that they're given the resources that they need in order to, continue to thrive.
Yeah, and I think your background as a contractor, I'm familiar with the Salem vocational programs from maybe a few years ago, not the ones currently or the programs currently there in the last 5 years or so, but you're right, for many students connecting through the through the vocational programs, and that's what they used to call them, allows them to actually access other mathematics skills and ELA skills and so on as well, while as well experimenting in the trades. So you're right. Very important piece, yeah.
The when we toured it, they showed us a videotape presentation, and part of it was in the medical field, they're going to be bringing in these, I want to call them 3D beds, and it's going to allow students to actually get in there and actually with a 3D model somehow controlled by a whole bunch of different aspects. I haven't seen it. I only saw the pictures of it, but Salem High School is going to be the first high school in the state to have one, to have two of these in order to train people on how to do medical procedures, and you know, from basically, you know, from the basics of, you know, taking blood to even more complicated stuff. So the fact that we're making those strides and we're expanding the culinary wing, because it's great, and to provide those opportunities for our kids. For the first time in years, we're actually seeing retention and actually seeing the numbers at the high school level for enrollment go up as to where they have been trending down. So I think it's something that kids want, you know, would, you know, want to get into, and I think it's just providing them with more opportunities so they can make those life choices once they graduate.
Yeah, absolutely. I know the medical piece, that's new from a few years ago, so that's great to hear. So let's jump to question number two, Mayor McCarthy, and that would be vision for Salem development and also affordability. So it's kind of a broad, maybe too complex of a two-part question. For question two, there's a lot out there, I guess, on that, but take it wherever you want to with that.
Sure. I mean, obviously, there's no denying that there's a housing need across the board, whether it's from senior housing all the way down to affordable housing. There is a need for housing, and you know, in Salem, like every other community, is looking at it how we tackle that. I know at the council level, when I was on the council, we looked at the ADU ordinance, which allows, you know, seniors that are aging out in their homes, that have a larger home, that their family's moved away, that they can carve out a small portion of the house, not to exceed, I want to say the number is 900 square feet, in order for them to be able to, you know, rent that out to somebody. Traditionally used to be just a family member. This, in the way we created the ordinance, is, you know, if you're living in the house and, you know, you own the house and you're renting out a portion of it, you can rent it out to a non-family member up to 900 square feet, and to help supplement your income, because a lot of times, you know, our seniors get to the point where they're house rich and cash poor in some senses, that they have, you know, they have a big investment in their home, and sometimes it's becoming now, because the costs are rising all over the place, that it's now sometimes unmanageable. So to provide that opportunity that they may be able to do that, we offer low interest rate loans in order for that to happen, so, which is also then tied to affordability. I mean, as a community, you know, when people throw, you know, people toss around the number of affordable, you know, everything's tied to the area mean income, which also includes Boston. So when you include Boston into the area mean income and you say affordable is anything 80% or below, that is not representative of what the affordability is in Salem. We look at that number as being somewhere either 60% or even lower. So in all, when we look at any, you know, developments that come into Salem that have, that are more than six units, we always look at to make sure that we're using, and that when we talk about affordable units, we look at a number that is 60% or below. And for us, 10% doesn't cut it anymore, so we will always look at a minimum of 20% of the units would be at 60% or below, so that would help towards affordability. In the council, we also looked at an order a couple years ago for municipal and religious reuse. So if you have an older municipal or religious building, in our cases, it was a couple of old schools that are associated with the Archdiocese. To be able to repurpose those into housing, we have one on Hawthorne Boulevard that's going to be approximately 30 artist studios, and we have another one off of Federal Street that's going to be approximately 30 senior housing units. That's going to be, the Archdiocese entered into a long-term lease agreement with the North Shore CDC, and the CDC is going to turn around and turn those into housing. So at the council level, we were able to work through to get that ordinance passed in order for that to be able to happen. And most recently, I just resubmitted in the inclusionary zoning ordinance, which would then allow for density bonuses around certain developments. So if you're going to create more affordability, then you can apply in certain cases for density bonuses, which would allow you to create more units than would typically be allowed But since you're going to do it for everything we just talked about, you're allowed to do that.
Mm. All right, I'm just going to jump to this next one, but I'm going to ask you, maybe make this a two-part question too. So, I'll spring one thing on you here, but it'll be easy for you here. First, the third one here would be, what is the advantage to having Salem's former mayor, Mayor Driscoll, now as lieutenant governor? But also, maybe you can also share with us what it's been like for you the last several weeks moving from a city councilor, ward councilor, to the acting mayor. So there's my two-parter there. I wanted to make sure we got that little, your transition documented here in this interview.
Well, I mean, the advantages, I guess, is I still have her cell phone number. and I've known Lieutenant Governor Driscoll for a long time. Our kids went to school together. We went on school trips together. We'd be off to the side talking, you know, city stuff. But she's a great asset because she, for the first time in a long time, the Lieutenant Governor who's actually been a mayor, who actually understands municipal finance, who actually understands, you know, the cherry sheet when it comes down to the city and understands what, you know, what it takes to run a city. I don't care if it's Salem or any other city. She brings that experience to that office. So I think she's going to be a help not only to Salem, but I think to every community out there because she has that knowledge of what it takes to run a city. Because when you look at it as, you know, come July 1st, we have to put a balanced budget on, you know, out in front of the city council, make sure they pass it by July 1st to make sure that the city can keep going. You know, in some other layers of government, they, you know, have more time or they have the ability to flex beyond that. Not, you know, municipal government, you know, the rubber hits the road, so to speak. So that's, she understands that and she understands what we're going through right now. I just had a couple department heads in this morning and we'll be, you know, and right in the middle of all the those budget meetings right now to try to fabricate and get a budget together for sometime in May so that we can get it to the council by the end of May, 1st of June, so they can deliberate it so we can pass a budget.
And your transition to becoming mayor, how has that been?
In all respects, it's been pretty smooth from what the feedback I've been hearing. I mean, it was evident when Lieutenant Governor Driscoll got elected in November. I laid the groundwork behind the scenes to make sure that it was a smooth transition. And when the Lieutenant Governor gave her farewell address to the City Council on our reorganizational meeting, we had it written into her letter to us that upon completion of that address, she would then be vacating as mayor. And at that point, we as a city council took a vote, and the city council unanimously elected me to fill that role. And I walked in the next morning with my box of odds and ends and my backpack of things I needed, and I sat down with the superintendent of schools at 10 o'clock the first day. And I haven't stopped since. I think the transition's been pretty smooth. I spent 15 years of learning municipal government on the other side of things, and I've spent the last, you know, almost 8 weeks taking what I learned as a city councilor and spending all those years understanding city government and just, I call it refocusing with a different lens. You know, for 15 years, I analyzed the decisions that were made after the fact, and now I'm presented with the same set of facts and problems, but I'm just putting on it. I have to figure out how to get to the way of how we're going to present it to the city council. So it's the same issues. It's just using a different lens. I find it's like reinvigorated me. It's like when I first got elected, when I was a ward councilor 15 years ago, you walk in with that energy. I have a new energy about me because of the way of the role I've been put into. And I don't shy away from it. It's a role that I was selected to do. I have 15 years experience on the council. I was the most experienced, and I thank them for giving me the opportunity to do this. But I also, you know, want to thank the employees of the city that have embraced me over the last 8 weeks to let, you know, I've let them know that I can't do my job without them. I value people and I value their contributions to the city and what they can do to help make, you know, the city a better place because, you know, it was, you know, myself as an elected official and the people that work for the city, our job is to serve the citizens of the city of Salem. And I think that we've continued to do that work over the last 8 weeks. And, you know, come March 28th, if I can move on to the next election, I get through the election beyond that. I want to continue doing it for the next 2.5 years beyond that. So that's why I jumped into the race.
So let's jump to a couple of topics that you've suggested for us. As the candidates have each suggested a couple of topics, unique topics that they think are important. And one for you would be the wind farm, the offshore wind farm, the property where the former power plant or coal power plant was. But give us an update on that and tell us what is significant about that and what is ahead in that area.
Well, as the Ward 1 councilor, when I put my Ward councilor hat back on for a brief second, I represented the ward where the power plant's located. I mean, when I first got elected, it was a coal-fired, oil-fired power plant. It was one of the filthiest power plants around, according to the surveys with regards to air pollution. And what we've been able to do in the last 15 years is the old coal-fired oil plant was decommissioned. We built a state-of-the-art gas-fired facility that still provides energy to the region and is slated to, by the agreement, to be offline in 2050, realizing the fact that that's the state's commitment to total green energy. But the remaining 40 acres, just most recently, because of what happened down in the White House a few years ago, the new administration's focus was on clean energy, was on wind in particular. The federal government is putting a lot of resources into the wind industry, and it was, people took a hard look at Salem again and realized with no overhead restrictions, with regards to bridges and power lines, no restrictions with regards to air traffic because there's no airport, that, and with a deep water port running right to the site, it was, Salem became really advantageous as a point for this type of facility. There's going to be job creation. There's going to be a huge investment, but more importantly, the Crowley, the entity that's going to purchase the property and now is working with the CEC at the state level to guarantee that they are going to try to work harmoniously with the neighborhood, because that's the people I represent, is to make sure that facility is going to work with the neighbors and also benefit the region, benefit Salem and the region as a whole. So I think they've committed to that, and they've committed to workforce development. And as I mentioned earlier, they've committed to already some programs, even at the high school level, realizing that this industry is upcoming. It is going to be a big part of investments across the board for years to come. And realizing that, to spark that interest even at a young age of someone in high school is important. So I give them credit for that, and and they're very receptive to all that the city is asking and requiring them, and it's going to be a great asset to the city and to the region as a whole.
All right, I want to jump to one last topic with you, and that would be, I guess it's kind of food insecurity. It relates to residents in the city, but also students in the city. It's been a big issue at the public schools, obviously at the community colleges, at Salem State as well, food insecurity. And also now there's a concern with maybe a cut in the COVID funding that was actually supporting some of this work in addition to the regular funds. So I guess give us an update on what you think is playing out here and how the mayor of Salem should be able to keep an eye on this.
I appreciate the question. I mean, food insecurity is going to be is a big topic. I most recently toured one of the facilities that they're putting. Actually, the Salem Food Pantry is actually creating a storefront on the end of Congress Street, which will be a big asset to them. They also have a storage facility of which, on a weekly basis, they service 6,000 individuals. Weekly 6,000 Salem individuals that are, that are food insecure, that take part in having foods either brought to them or they come to the various locations where it's available. The previous administration, I just signed off on it, included some ARPA funding. They're going to actually get it's like a food van, so they can pull up to various locations. The sides open up, trays pull out, and they'll have produce across the board. They'll have some frozen materials, they'll have canned goods, everything that somebody may need just to get by. Sometimes we forget about the most basic things, but with with just getting by on a weekly basis. And, you know, and some of those federal dollars are going to be drying up soon. So I think there's going to be even more need for that. But at the same time, as you know, when I talk to people in the school systems, you know, we have approximately 200 individuals, you know, school-aged children that would be considered, you know, housing insecure, whether they're couch surfing or they're in some sort of situation where they're not permanently housed, and that becomes difficult. Especially, I mean, you're a child that you're trying to, you know, get an education. You don't know where you're going to be living, but at the same time, as sometimes you don't know where your next meal's coming from too. So I know at the school level, we try to provide, you know, a lot of different services to them, but you know, just the whole aspect of someone, you know, trying to, you know, figure out what they're going to do for life, being able to study and, you know, make their grades, at the same time worrying about where they're going to live and, you know, where the next meal's coming from, is, you know, something that we want to take off their plate to make sure that they can, you know, focus on what they should be focused on, getting a good education, and make sure that they are able to succeed in life. So,
yeah, and then the other thing too is, and I did a number of interviews around the holiday season. I mean, with the rate of inflation that we've been incurring in the last 12 months or so, all these costs are just skyrocketing. Whether you're trying to go to the grocery store or for the pantries themselves, their costs are on the rise as well, big time.
Yep, the pantries actually, we went out and met them at their facility. They're actually coming in, obviously, you know, to try to talk about, we're going to be talking in the next week or so, we're going to be talking about some of these issues and how we as a city can help, you know, partner up with our various partners in the community that provide services to these individuals that are, you know, both housing insecure and food insecure. So, you know, they can't contribute. We want to make sure that they're going to be able to contribute back to society in a meaningful way, you know, by just providing those basic, you know, life needs, you know, that helps a lot. So anything we can do as a community, you know, as a city, to help those institutions benefit our residents is obviously very important.
All right, Bob, our time is just about up here, but I want to give you any parting shots here, any conclusions, any summaries, or any other final thoughts. By the way, we do link to your website if there's anything you want to point out on that, but feel free to take the last moment or two here and wrap this up for us and share anything else that we didn't really touch on or you want to elaborate on, or just some final thoughts.
People, I mean, obviously people have come to me and asked me, you know, Bob, you jumped into this race late. I don't look at it as I jumped into the late. My job isn't to tear down any of the other candidates. I know them all. I've known them all. I've got to know them over the years through various things. My job is to build myself up and make people understand that there's a choice. And I believe that, you know, I'm uniquely positioned right now. 15 years on the city council, I'm the only person in the race that's had his name on the ballot municipally for the last 15 years, 3 times as council president, 3 times chair of ANF. I have a unique understanding of what the challenges have been in Salem for the last 15 years, and I think I'm positioned to make sure that, you know, I'm the right person to move us forward for the next 2.5 years, you know, after the special election. I'm a people person. I value people. I value how people contribute to make society better and to make us better. I want to go back to this, you know, pre-COVID, there was, you know, Salem had a better, in my opinion, had a better sense of community. COVID has kind of, you know, made us all topsy-turvy. There's a little bit of sense of anger out there, which, you know, we need to refocus on the little things. I call it back to basics. We need to do those little quality of life things that make people feel better about where they live and about their community, which then they can reach out and branch out and get involved back into the community to make it better for everyone. And that's why I jumped into this race, just to give people a choice. And I think that I provide the best choice, and I would just ask everyone for their consideration on March 28th.
You got it. Well, Bob, thanks so much for your story, your insights, and your comments. We really do appreciate it, and of course your time for joining us to share your story and your candidacy with our listeners. So, Bob, again, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Yep. Bob McCarthy, candidate for mayor and actually acting mayor of the city of Salem, here on MSONewsSports.com.